exchange systems, moneyless exchange systems, and private currencies that monetize the value of local production.
Yeah.
I am Julian Nathalie, architect, covering the University of Budapest, and I am an advisor to the Hungarian Supplementary Currency, but I am in the lab for the, my advice is in the lab.
Okay, well, what the subject of this conversation is about is how we measure value, how we denominate our credit. It's easiest to think in terms of a community currency that is a credit clearing exchange, or a private currency issued by a local producer. Let me ask, how do you denominate your credits in your trade exchange?
They're denominated to the nation, local currency.
Okay.
Like credit is equal to one Bulgarian lek.
Okay. So this is pretty typical in the commercial trade exchange industry that internal credits are denominated in equivalent units to the national currency in that location. What are some other possible ways of denominating the credit?
Time.
Lots of currencies are denominated in time. Time banks denominate their obligations in time. What's another possibility?
There's energy, I mean, that's something I'm looking at.
Isn't energy it? Units?
Yes.
Now you understand that you said solar, I wasn't clear on what you said in the end of the documentary round, but now I understand that you said solar.
Oh, solar, yeah, yeah.
No problem, yeah. My
kilowatt hour. Potentially, yeah, it's a bit up in the air.
Kilowatt hour or yeah. It's like the building
interview. Yeah. It's hard to read.
This is not a very good show.
Well, I just wrote down what you already said. You can denominate national currency units in units of time, or energy units. What else?
Anything quantifiable.
Anything quantifiable, like?
Shoes, gloves, pencils, whatever.
How do you generalize shoes, gloves, and pencils?
Well, you can do them by weight. You can do it by kilo. You can do it or by volume.
Are we talking about commodities?
Yeah. Physical
products. Yeah. Alcohol and cigarettes.
Cigarettes?
Well, they're living constant major exchange, isn't it?
At the end of World War II, that was quite common in Europe for currency to be in the form of cigarettes or nylon stockings or Hershey chocolate bars, things of that sort. So, any other possibilities?
Just points of appreciation.
Points of appreciation.
Which is very important.
How do you nail that down in quantifiable terms?
Yeah, the thing is that's not really extremely quantifiable, so it makes it a little bit more edgy, I think.
So like just credit.
Yes, but it's like they give, I don't know how to say it in English, but they give a kind of guideline that if you would do this, so it's still somewhere linked to time, if you would do an amount of work for 1 hour, then it would be 20 value points, but still amongst each other you can still, if I really like the work that you did, then I would give you 25 anyway, so it has a more very heavy,
that's strict. So we can call that validation points. Thanks. Validate you for having done something good. Mm-hmm. So we got national currencies, units, time units, energy units, commodities, some weight, or amount measured in some scale, and you got validation points.
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin is a virtual commodity.
Gold and silver is a commodity as well.
Yeah, gold and silver are commodities. In fact, many currencies were originally defined as this fixed weight of gold or silver. Mm-hmm. A pound sterling was a pound of sterling silver. The US dollar was originally defined as a specified weight of fine silver. What are the characteristics that you want to have in a measure of value or pricing unit? Well, the unit itself is worth nothing. It's like in Paris they have this standard meter, which is simply two points on a wall that say this is what a meter is. And I guess it's pretty arbitrary. Why did they choose this much instead of this much or this much? What's the important thing? The important thing is that we agree on this as a standard. It's really pretty arbitrary whether we say it's this much or this much. And they put it there where you can see it, so everybody knows what a meter is. So then you can take a stick and put it up against there and make two marks and say, okay, I'll use this stick to measure meters in my shop. And they have a lump of something that defines the kilogram. Where is that? Somewhere in the Sorbonne? The standard kilometer?
It's Sèvres, isn't it?
Huh?
It's Sèvres near Paris.
Sèvres, okay. But there is, that's called the standard. The standard is the physical thing that tells you how much length, how much weight. Can we do the same thing for value? Can we have a standard that tells how much value? Isn't that what the specified amount of silver was? We had a way of measuring pounds, and they took silver and heaped it up until they had a pound and said, okay, this is a measure of value, 1 pound of silver, and we'll express the value of everything else in terms of silver. So, if 2 bushels of wheat is worth 1 pound of silver, fine. If we have a drought and the wheat harvest is bad, maybe I want 3 pounds of silver for my bushel of wheat. So, how does this apply? How does this apply to time? How do we know what a minute is worth or an hour is worth? Do we have some standard that defines a standard hour as a value?
It's sort of atomic principle, isn't it? The deterioration of some atomic.
A what?
Isn't it based on the deterioration rate of an atomic particle?
Because that was the measurement of quantum intelligence. How can you define how much that is worth?
Some of the fast and the fast, anybody work, not so fast. You cannot, you may use the time as a measure, but not, it depends on how fast are you working. Okay, so the value of your time depends on how fast you work, how hard you work, how much skill you have. So there is no way to standardize the value inherent in a unit of time. In fact, I forgot who it was who said it. You know, this is an age-old discussion about using time as a measure of value. And what I came up with in my research is that the value of a unit of labor, the value of time spent in labor, depends on the product that it produces. So, you know, I could paint the wall
maybe in 2 hours, maybe you could do it in 1 hour. Are they equal? Are they equal in value? You've produced twice as much value as I have because you've done it in half the time. So your hour is worth twice as much as my hour. How can you use that as a unit of measure to measure the value of everything else being traded?
It's just the other way around. The trading of the ore is the value.
Exactly. It's the product that is the value. One painted wall would be a better unit of measure, regardless of how much time it takes, because we each take a different amount of time to do that. That's why I don't favor time units as a measure of value, because it's not the time.
For the sake of discussion, would you be inclined to see it also in the way of that for a person as an individual itself, each time it's valuable?
To him?
Yes.
Not necessarily to me.
Not that I agree. Yes.
And so we have to deal with the realities. Whose labor is more valuable to the collective, to the community? The one who is most skilled? The one who can accomplish the job quickest? Most in demand. Why would one person have greater demand for his time than another?
Because he's more skilled.
Because
there is a particular situation that requires his skill, and there isn't a lot of supply. So I guess it's a meeting between supply and demand. If there are thousands of doctors in your country, and not a very big population, then I guess doctors pay less.
Right. So supply and demand is a market mechanism. Is it reasonable to utilize market mechanisms as a way of valuing things? Or do you want to arbitrarily say that my hour and your hour are the same? It's a philosophical argument, and this is the difference between the time dollar people and the people that want to use a different unit of measure.
Of course, there is the third option, which is the gray option, where you create three variables of 1, 2, and 3. So it's like saying that you accept this company for the highest paid workers who earn 10 times tops more than the lowest paid, and you have some sort of limit. And so in the same idea, you say that instead of one person being by supply and demand rewarded 10 times more than the other, you can limit that to 3 or 4. So 1 hour of your equals 4 of my hours, for example.
Okay, so that's an administered price structure.
But then you let the market decide it for itself. Only you limit the range in which the market can react.
Uh-huh. So you have all the doctors and dentists and other skilled professionals at the top level and the babysitters and others at the bottom level. Is that what happens? Should not what?
It should not be resolved by emission of cost.
Right. So, is it a matter of an imposed restriction, or is it a matter of agreement within the community? So we have the Soviet in charge of labor decide the limits.
There should be a window whereby a babysitter should have been penalized because she earned no less than a doctor. So I think the community could get there, depending on how big is the main. I mean, I remember you book the event of Vortex, so maybe you can do stuff with certain amount of people and this work. And if you change the number, then you have to change the government structure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was addressing a different problem. That was addressing the problem of governance and functionality within a cooperative unit.
Yeah, I got their comments saying we have numerical limits on how people can entertain relations. So even deciding at the community level whether the proposal can fall or not.
Okay, so if we say that the limit on executive pay to ordinary worker pay is 3 times or 5 times or 10 times, we still have to define a unit to measure value. We haven't addressed that problem.
It's arbitrary, Nestle, until you just reach some sort of consensus though.
That's what we're doing here.
There's another side to it. If I want to have my role painted, then the question is how long do I want to work to have that someone else have that have my role painted? Mm-hmm. So if I get the fastest painter that I can get and can do it in 1 hour, does it mean that I also would have to work 1 hour to have my role painted?
Okay.
To pay the painter.
You're the member, you're both members of a credit clearing exchange, okay? So you hired him to paint your wall. How much are you willing to pay him to paint your wall? How much of a debit should you get in your account, and how much of a credit should he get in his account? 1 unit, 5 units, 20 units? And what are the units?
I don't know if it's possible, if you can define an hour as the unit of having some job being done by a person who can do it best.
One person?
One person.
Or you want to take an average of people doing the same job?
Well, this is for, let's say, the best painter that I can get, I can do it in 1 hour. I can paint my wall in 1 hour. Then it's more or less logical, I think, that I would be willing to work myself for 1 hour in exchange in some kind of work that I can do maybe the best.
Okay, you're back to the time bank model. So what about developed markets? You know, how do you use this in international trade? How do you do this in inter-regional trade? Okay, so what do we use instead?
Well, I think everything is on a relative level, even gold.
Yes?
The million people could pay their streets with gold, so it cannot have been anything of much value to them.
Okay, so you're talking about different markets. Certain things have different value in different markets.
Yes.
And what determines the market value of something?
Situation.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
Social valuation.
So it's a social process of determining the market value. And this is a point that people get confused about. There's a difference between the value that you might put on something and the market value of something. To me, a pack of cigarettes has zero value. To you, they might be worth $5 a pack or $10 a pack. Or if you're a real addict, you pay $20 a pack. But the market price is the price that's set by the infinite calculus of goods, prices offered and prices asked. But we still are left with the question of what unit do we use to set prices?
It's just universal.
Hmm?
It's just universal, isn't it?
It doesn't have to be universal. You can have a local standard or local pricing unit. Like you have euro units over here, we've got dollar units over in the States, and they've got what in Bulgaria? Rubles in Russian.
For like 5 minutes now, I've been trying to think because of the interesting questions you're raising. Obviously, this has to be something which has a principle rather than an arbitrary answer. So I'm trying to think, well,
building on this example of you can have four different, like the highest executive to the lowest paid worker, the difference between them times four, for example. So an hour is a very good arbitrary time unit of measure because it's easily understood. It's 1 hour in the clock. However, somebody's time is equals 4 hours, like the doctor, because he's higher paid. So I should say that the universal time of measure, unit of measure, is 1 hour of a simple task being performed.
That's still really relevant. What's simple task? What's
simple
performance?
So yeah.
How much effort is involved?
Well,
that's so, what about, in science, we have a certain amount of energy that is required to keep a certain volume of water 1 degree. So, yeah.
What do we call that? Calorie.
Yeah.
So,
what
are
we talking about?
Calories.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
How
calories instead of small things?
How do you
like it? That's
it is difficult.
For me, it takes 3 bananas.
We did have a suggestion earlier about using a unit of energy as a standard of value to measure everything else against.
Like what Peter said, it has to be something that's a part of a universal principle, a universal function that anybody can replicate.
From my point of view,
I'm measured, I think.
It could
also be like
calories, food.
I'm thinking
calorie
sticks right now.
Huh? Calorie sticks? Yeah, the calorie sticks were denominated in a unit. What unit?
Sticks.
No, not sticks.
Calorie sticks.
They were denominated in pounds.
Yeah.
Let's go with the energy unit.
Well, then the other problem is that in a way, at least we've got a scarcity. We also have to fight the question of what things do we want to relegate to scarcity. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want to have, why not do a liter of water? A liter of water is a very specified amount, something that always has use, because they always need to drink it to stay hydrated. But at the same time, if you want to associate money directly with a liter of water, then, in a way, you're kind of extending the principle of scarcity if you want to have scarce money to water, which you don't want to have. You want to have that be abundant.
The value standard that we choose has nothing to do with the abundance or scarcity of the commodity that it's based on.
Okay.
When we look at the meter, you missed this part of the discussion. When we look at the meter, we define the meter as being this much. And there's a standard in Paris, it's on the wall, you can go and see what a meter is. And you can measure your own meter stick against it to use in commerce. Or you can go see the standard kilogram, which is a lump of metal that defines the weight of a kilogram. And you can get a balance scale and get your own weights to correspond to the standard. So we're trying to come up with something to measure value in a universal way.
All of these are arbitrary, aren't they?
Arbitrary. Completely arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
But there are advantages to using certain things over others.
Yes.
I think energy, it makes a lot of sense to go with energy. Because it is a lowest common denominator in terms of
cost. I still don't get how you get it.
You can't use it in the present, though. Because there's a lot of energy, for example, that goes into being a doctor versus the energy that goes into being a babysitter.
I'm talking physical electric energy.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. It's really complex. How something only nerds can put their head.
It sounds like a conversational calculus.
And it puts construction works above being an engineer. We're
not talking about relative evaluation of labor. We're talking about the unit of account in which that labor is denominated. So, the engineer, the doctor can still earn more units of this than the day worker, the day laborer. But this is just, it isn't dollars that we're talking about anymore. It's kilowatt hours, whatever that is.
we're trying to educate people, I think, you know, around different ways of behaving and working together. You really need something that's more accessible.
Yeah.
People, I think, would just easily understand.
Which time is perfect.
Which time is perfect for us. It's also a scarce resource, or an abundant resource. You know, it's like energy, though, in that sense, it's kind of infinite.
Oh.
What advantage? What advantage does a commodity have over time? Anything?
It's transferable. It's visual.
Yeah, well, it's transferable. You can sell your time too.
But it's independently verifiable. I guess time is
useful. Independently verifiable.
Yeah, it's experiencing more objective.
Subjective.
Mm-hmm. But
time is subjective.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it must be very subjective, the measure of life. Things that subjectively share, but very subjectively experience. So for me, I mean, everybody I think can agree that 1 kilo of bread, if it costs less than 10 euro cents, it's very cheap, and if it costs more than 10 euros, very expensive.
Okay, how about we use one loaf of whole grain bread weighing 1 kilo? Is that a good standard?
I don't know, because I have problems in giving the definition of a measure with another measure. So if I have to measure value and I go back to kilos, I need kilos to measure weight.
Yeah.
I need X to measure value. And I need meters to measure distances. But if I use distances to measure value, I think I'm getting more complicated than nature should be.
Why is that?
Because it's redundant. I use a ratio to give value to another ratio.
But we're not measuring value in terms of meters. We're measuring value in terms of meters of something. Or we're measuring value in terms of kilograms of something.
I was born in a world where we measure value through weight, so I live in England and I have 5 pound note, but then I go to read and it's 5 pounds of nothing.
Well,
maybe
is that the problem of the standard, or is that the problem of the currency?
The standard, I think.
It used to be 1 pound of sterling silver.
Yeah, but the objective ecosystem situation has changed. So maybe gold was okay when the total population of the world was 1 billion. Maybe gold is not anymore okay when we are 10 billion.
Why is that?
I ignore it. I mean, I'm just provoking now because I ignore it.
What establishes value? We said supply and demand.
That's the agreement, I think. The community agreement on, I think if we ask 10% how much 1 kilo of that should cost, they would say $1, let's say. On average, I mean the Gaussian distribution would say on average.
You're still stuck in thinking in terms of dollars and
one X, one free coin, one Bitcoin, it's the same for me. You just need to invent a name that we prefer more than dollar, but then I think it's just a time cost.
Why is Bitcoin a good thing? What is Bitcoin?
I think it shatters the collective story that we've been under the impression of, that central banks and governments are the only ones who create currency. That's the only thing that really provides.
I agree.
Yeah.
It shatters the myth of government power over money.
Yeah.
As far as I know, it's the first international coin used seriously. Unlike,
okay, I would throw this out. In order for something to be a good standard, it needs to be actively traded in the market. It needs to be subject to the forces of supply and demand. That's the way we establish a consensus about the value of something.
Sorry. How we should do that, because the game is rigged. It's actually not made in that way.
Forget about the game. We're inventing a new system from scratch.
Yeah, we have.
So we don't have to worry about the one
model hanging in the middle.
Of
the
world. Okay, normally, I think we need the market. Yeah, price.
So we have markets for commodities. They're bought and sold all the time. We can easily track the price minute by minute, second by second. for example, a bushel of wheat, we can track the price in terms of dollars or euros or some other political currency. But suppose we keep the bushel of wheat as our unit of measure, and we track the value of the dollar in terms of wheat, track the dollar, the euro in terms of wheat. And we can see if the dollar is holding its value relative to the real valuable thing.
That's kind of what happens with gold standard.
Exactly.
So how do you do that? Well, we don't necessarily want to retrogress back into, I mean, at least not a silver or gold thing.
Why not?
I thought that I was going to take a while and thought that was a good idea for a bit to try to preach that gospel. He's got so many resistance from so many people on the way. Also, there's not that much silver and gold in the planet to supply enough monetary value.
And the way that we extract them is going to be.
Does it matter how much silver or gold there is on the planet if we use it as a measure?
Yeah.
As long as it's actively traded in the market and we have a benchmark for it.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is still kind of subject to the 1% that wins the market.
Yeah,
that
it
can be manipulated to serve political.
Okay, markets can be manipulated. This was the problem with a single commodity.
Especially
basket.
When
there
the game of gambling plays long enough, there's usually one or two players left in the board.
Exactly.
No matter who's playing it. Can be monkeys, not to stand in bad elements.
You know how the Monopoly game originated?
Yeah, there's a different set of rules, and then the company that they bought it,
Parker Brothers,
they bought it. They made the other rules, and then they made it to where you the person sold them the game. It was a woman. She sold them the game on the condition that they would send the original rules with it, or that they would make that available to people. So they did, you know, kind of a legal switcheroo on it. Mm-hmm. So you could get the rules, you had to send in for them, and then they would send it afterwards. So it came to stand out there.
You know why this woman invented the Monopoly game?
To show you the monopolies are evil and to try to avoid them?
More specifically, she was a follower of Henry George. Ever hear of Henry George?
No.
Oh, it's sad.
Yes,
it's so sad. Ever hear of the land value tax, the single tax movement?
Yeah.
That came out of Henry George's work 120 years ago. Henry George wrote a book called Progress and Poverty. It was a bestseller, only outsold by the Bible back 120 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And basically he said the reason why the rich get rich and the poor get poorer is because the first people to arrive in a place take the land, take the best, and then they force everybody else who comes after to pay rent to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you end up with...
Sorry, can you repeat that? I missed it. Sorry.
Yeah, the first people to colonize a place, mm-hmm. they take the best land, and then those that come later have to either buy it from them or rent it from them.
Mm-hmm.
So those who control the land are masters of the economy. Well, now it's those who control the money issuance are the masters of the economy. So it's whatever is in limited supply or can be kept in limited supply that you control allows you to control everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the dilemma that we face. But
Silvio
Gesell? Yeah, somewhat. He had his own original ideas, and he had a lot of good things to say, but the only thing that people remember about Gesell is Demirage, which wasn't his best idea at all, by the way.
But equally, the currency will get its value from how it's issued.
Yeah, exactly.
So, obviously, money's issues. You know, as central banks all over the place, so it kind of devalues the brand.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas if you are able to restrict in the same way the issuance of not of time, but of recording itself, then you reject the values.
We cannot restrict the amount of dollars or euros that the central bank and the governments and the banks issue. That's their game.
Not even then we should decide it through credit.
We need to create a new game, and we need to determine what kind of units are we going to use to denominate our independent creditors? The default, because we all understand it, is to use the equivalents to the euros or the dollars, depending on where we happen to be. But as they continue to debase those units, you know, our units are going to trail along with them. Well, that's okay as long as we're using it just as a medium of exchange. You're not going to ever have a big supply of credits in your trade exchange. You're going to spend them as fast as you get them and convert them into something of real value. But if we get into long-term contracts where I'm going to lend you some of my internal credits from my trade exchange earnings, then I want to know that 5 years from now when you pay me back, that those credits are going to buy the same amount of value as I gave to you. So that's where an independent unit of account becomes important in time-related agreements, so investments.
Yeah. As you said, we've defined a few parameters here. I'd like to introduce one more. There is one Facebook, one meme I saw on Facebook, which is rather brilliant. It showed you that 1 meter is 100 centimeters, and 1 centimeter is 100 millimeters, and so forth. And then he showed you the feet and yards, and it was all, you know, there was absolutely nothing, there's no logic in it, for me at least, because I'm not American. And so...
I think you said before that it's arbitrary.
Yes.
So... That's the value of standards. We should all do it the same way, and then it's easy for us to understand each other.
Yeah, and Fahrenheit, I never get what it means. Seriously,
we're like one of two or three countries left on the planet that isn't on the metric thing. So, like, eventually we'll get over it.
Well, the metric system is a resource.
and the reason I gave this example is I think whatever unit it is, it has to be easy to have it or double it. And the circumstances in which it is measured and quantified, etc., should be really simple, like the metric system. This is something that I find time supplies. A unit of time is easily divided into or double, and we already do it for other uses called getting places and knowing what the time is. Because I find that our mission is both to create something that is of value and both to create something that is easily understood by people.
Yeah.
It's perhaps at least as important as creating the value part.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting. I like that. I like you introduced this because I was kind of just thinking of how we do have a need for something that's objective. You know, for instance, like the ability to travel from one place to another. So, like, just take me a kilometer, like the ability to travel a kilometer. You know, but then there's like different ability, different ways you can do that. You could do that by walking. You can do that by riding a bike. You could do that in a vehicle that's fueled by fossil fuels, or you can do that in an electric vehicle. So there is like, there's an objective part, but a subjective part as well.
But what are you valuing in that subjective
part? The relative desirability of the means. So essentially, you know, fossil fuels versus clean energies.
So one is a 4 and one is 128.
Somewhat subjective, and I mean, like, I know that I've already met a lot of you, and like, you've probably heard this, but you know, my thing was the merits, and this is just a totally subjective currency issued out to people for doing good things in their communities. They would go and they'd volunteer, they'd work an hour. It could be, you know, and again, it's subjective. So like, working an hour in the community gardens versus working an hour picking up some garbage, working in the garden is a lot harder labor, so we'd give more merit for that, and we felt like it was more productive.
But that's subjective.
It is subjective, but at the same time, it was objective in that it was a good deed. You know, we could, and I mean, granted, again, that's subjective, what's good.
But you're talking about individual judgments now, not the collective judgment that we have in the marketplace in establishing a market price.
Yeah.
It is not really. But we're talking about.
I'm thinking, and I cannot really. I think I have experienced that. Even though the first day is that the work works like that.
You know, but it's
but the price is not. Not reached at the aggregate level with the contribution of the player because of market information.
Have you been following Bitcoin in the past year? The price?
Yeah.
That's what you experienced. Not great here.
No, there's
I wouldn't go into that, but in normal terms, I don't see this process going on, at least not in my country, in Taiwan. I never seen this free market thing really going.
Free markets are rare today.
Okay.
But you can still see them. You know, you can go to a public market where farmers bring their produce to sell. I used to work in one as a young boy. We had a lot of small farms around the area that three times a week would bring their produce to the market, and people would go through and buy apples and peppers and tomatoes, and you have many different vendors selling pretty much the same thing, some a little different. And in that place, you have pretty much free competition. So I look at your tomatoes and I say, oh, they're nice, how much do you want? You say, $2.50, and I go down here and I say, oh, I see you have some nice tomatoes too, how much do you want? I say, I'll sell you 2 1/4. So I think I'll buy hers.
eBay.
Yeah, eBay is a competitive market. It's a free market. We're talking about similar things. Suppose her tomatoes are smaller. They don't look quite as ripe. Maybe she needs to sell them for $2 instead of $2.25, because I'll go for her higher quality, even though it's a higher price. So we have this infinite calculus of the marketplace. A lot of people coming through. You see, your tomatoes are not selling. She's selling all her tomatoes. What are you going to do?
Lower
your price. But we have to have a standard. We have to have a unit in which to express these prices. So is it dollars? Is it euros? Is it kilograms of wheat? Is it pounds sterling, silver? What?
Kilowatt
hours of energy. And how do you differentiate wind electricity from coal electricity? I mean, it all goes into the grid. How do you know which kilowatts you're getting?
Well, I mean, then you're talking about having a clean utility back in the mix with clean energy redemption, clean energy dispense or something.
Let me throw out something. I thought about this a long time, and I came up with some criteria for a good value standard. First of all, a standard has to be traded in relatively free markets so that you have a minute-to-minute, hour-by-hour benchmark of where it is. Doesn't matter whether it's being sold for euros or dollars or some other currency. You have the value. So let's say it's an ounce of silver. Today, an ounce of silver is trading for $30.50. And tomorrow, I look at it, it's trading for $32.25. So, if I price my wheat or my apples or my tomatoes in terms of ounces of silver, and I'm still getting the same amount of dollars. So if I say my tomatoes are 1 silver ounce, that's my price. I'll take dollars, I'll take euros, I'll take other currencies, but according to the value of silver in the market. So yesterday it was $30.50 I would sell my tomatoes for. Today it's $32.25 you have to give me if I take dollars. But I'm still getting the value of 1 ounce of silver for my product. So that's the first criteria, traded in one or more relatively free markets. If we're going to go to a universal standard, it should be important in world trade, something that's actively traded on the world markets. Like what?
Oil.
Oil? Well, the fact is that we use a lot of oil and it's actively traded. So as a measure of value, it's quite useful. You might not want to buy it, but
coffee.
Silver, coffee.
Wood.
Wood. What kind of wood? Any wood?
Yeah.
Firewood?
Yeah,
cut lumber?
Yeah.
Oak?
I have a question that I'm not sure of. Can I answer up this program question? If we base our value on something, does that make that, does that affect that something, and how does it affect it?
Yes.
Not really. If we define the foot as the size of the king's foot,
yes.
Does that affect the king's foot?
No.
Yeah,
but the
king's foot
is regulated openly.
The
thing that we base on our measure is oil. Does that change our relationship with oil?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. I don't understand how. I have a gut feeling, but.
Well, I mean, it's subject to the forces of market demand. It's not just that supply and demand right now, it's as soon as we start involving the futures and the speculation aspects.
So somebody's buying a shipload of oil, it changes the measure of unit we use for trading bread. And
sure. I mean, again, that's just a new application. But
okay, it doesn't affect the market for oil, but it does affect the market for everything else, because mm-hmm. if we're measuring in terms of oil, and the oil market is manipulated, and somebody can move the market up or down, then that's going to cause...
Oil is the new Fed. That's what needs to be manipulated to control the rest of everything.
Yeah. So I want the rest of the qualities, and I want to cut to the chase. What are we putting in this basket?
Okay, so this is an argument against a single commodity.
Yeah.
All right. The third criterion is... It should be important in satisfying basic human needs.
What was the second? First one is trade in the open market. Second?
Important in world trade.
Mm-hmm.
Third one is important in satisfying basic human needs. So this would shift our emphasis to things like food products. And fibers from gold and silver and things that have relatively little use in terms of human needs. The fourth criterion is relatively stable in price over time, because you want a standard that's relatively invariant, that it's not going to fluctuate wildly. And the fifth criterion is uniform in quality or standardized quality. You know, you look at the commodities markets, they deal in things like pork bellies. How do you standardize pork bellies? How is one pork belly comparable to another? It's easy to see how 1 ounce of gold is comparable to another ounce of gold, or one bushel of red wheat is comparable to another bushel of red wheat. But they have ways of dealing with this in the commodities markets.
Can you repeat the last one? You said uniform quality and...
That was basically...
Or standardized
quality. Those criteria are in my Appendix B in this book. They're also in my first book, Money and Debt, A Solution to the Global Crisis, which you can download for free. From reinventingmoney.com.
So then, based on those criteria,
we have to select an assortment of commodities. The advantage of several commodities over one commodity is that it's harder to manipulate a whole bunch of commodities at once. Mm-hmm. Fluctuations in one commodity can be subject to weather conditions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about grains, for example. So when you average all these fluctuations together, you end up with a more stable standard. So Ralph Borsodi, back in the 1970s, proposed a constant currency that was measured in terms of a market basket of commodities. and he chose 30 commodities. I wouldn't choose the same ones. I think that what we have to do is do a study of different commodities and how they conform to these criteria that I mentioned, and then choose a bunch of commodities to put in our standard, and then monitor the prices of those commodities.
Can I do that?
Sure.
Yeah. I took a 30-year span of exactly his commodities from when we looked at them. Just kind of pull up the results.
A market basket of commodities?
Yeah, that's it. What this was like in the economic news, that's how they say it.
Economists call it an index standard.
Yeah, an index.
It's the flip side of an index.
They say that in the news, in the end of the broadcast on the radio. So they say the index went up this month.
Yeah. And in Chile, they have something called the Unido de Fomento, which was, it's actually geared to their consumer price index, which is not particularly good. But, you know, when the Chilean currency was being inflated, people didn't want to denominate their long-term contracts in pesos because the values were not comparable over time. So they came up with this Unido de Fomento, and a lot of contracts are drawn in terms of Unidos.
We knew it as well. Belgium was one of the few countries that
uses
Belgium.
Oh, yes?
We link our income, our salary, to that index.
What index?
There's been a lot of strikes by the union because the politicians want to cancel it. We have our basket of commodity goods. They changed that to a health index because they wanted to get rid of oil, tobacco, and alcohol out of that index basket because it was making too much. Yeah, then it became too high. So it actually, by changing that index, our salaries went down.
Same way in the United States. My Social Security payment is geared to the consumer price index.
Yeah,
but the consumer price index is a government index, and they manipulate it to keep it small.
So there's one, ideologically it makes sense, but the major hitch is the global consensus.
No, we're talking about market consensus.
Right, okay, market consensus.
And if you have relatively free markets, are we done?
It's relatively free, but in 10 minutes you have to be done.
Okay, we'll be done.
In 10 minutes,
is that market consensus, or is that the analogy?
Market consensus.
And if we can hold, for example, this perfect currency...
No, it's not a currency. It's a unit to measure value. Huh?
Commodity-based currency?
No, it's not a currency.
Okay.
A currency is a means of payment. We're not paying anybody with this. We're just using it to denominate our credit. We're using credit to pay.
Yes, we are not talking about interest, because any currency, we're talking about inflation of the value of goods, but where is the interest?
There's no interest.
My question was, okay, if we can pose, like before, there is a gold-backed currency, and the interest which the banks put on the currency, maybe the same thing doesn't matter if the currency is backed or not.
It's not backed. We're not backing a currency with these commodities. You cannot convert your currency in these commodities except by buying them on the market. We're simply using the commodities as a way of measuring the amount of credit that I owe you.
Generating that market consensus, if a large proportion of markets saying gold is money. How do you generate that? How does the market reach?
The market reaches consensus automatically by purchase offers and
So you're saying that people start using that as the standard.
Yeah.
It'll spread.
What's the effect of feedback loop? When the market, the market is, the prices are made up by the market supply and demand idea, but currency is affected by the measure of measuring unit. Is there a feedback loop once the measuring unit is affected by the actual market, not an arbitrary decision of the government?
The currency is not affected by the measuring unit. The currency is affected by the actions of the central bank and the banking system and the government. Now we have a way of measuring the value of the currency independently. And we can see the value of the dollar going down, the value of the euro going down. And so just like any credit instrument, we can evaluate the euro. We can say what the euro is worth.
The value will be based on people purchasing things they actually need. And the balance volume, does that happen?
Yeah, in a way. It's like the relative valuation of all these market price intersections.
Isn't it kind of pointless? Because no one's going to get it
right now.
It's great in theory, but in practice, where's the traction?
We have to do it. We have to do it and give people a chance to play around with it and see how it works.
Can you please explain? Because I...
All right. To simplify it, I took a single commodity in this book as an example. I happen to take the original definition of a dollar, which was 371¼ grains of fine silver. And using that as the unit of measure of value, I took an example of what the dollar would be worth at different points in time. So you take your eye off the hole and put your eye on the donut. Mm. You know, there's an old saying, keep your eye on the donut, not on the hole. The dollar is the hole. The commodity, the actual value, is the donut.
Yeah.
It's like, you see these pictures, do you see a vase or do you see two faces?
Yeah.
Mira, the most challenging part, aspect of this is how the community currencies that we are creating can evolve together with the official currency. To me, there are very important advantages in using the parity with the official currency, because this allows people to invoice, pay taxes, and do everything exactly the same they do with the official currency in the community currency.
Yes.
And there is such a marketing benefit for the scheme, because it makes it easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it worries me a lot that the official currency effectively debases, because they are debased all, but somehow all this money that they have created is in the stratosphere and is not really applying to different services. So the inflation is not realizing yet, but one day it might. So when it happens, what will happen to the value, the relative value, and what to do? Because we can artificially keep it linked to the debased money, our community currency.
Yeah.
Instead,
Brazil faced that. And I listened to a story on National Public Radio in the U.S. on this. They had the data clip of the story of how the Brazil, I thought it was real. It's not real.
Real.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. The official currency is called real.
Yeah, well, before that, you had a currency that was always inflating, so losing value. And so there's... So the thing that I took away from this story is that people were like running it like every week. They were going to reprice everything in the new higher price because the thing was in value. And so what they did to create the real was that they just created a new standard of value, and they required, they said that things had to be priced in that alongside the other one. And it would always just be one or whatever, and then the other price would be going up, but it was still one.
Yeah.
And that eventually they took off the other inflated price. You had to go through the real to see what the other price was. And they said, okay, fine, forget the other price. So I think we have to do the same thing, and that what we do is we create a standardized unit of measure that we all relate the community currencies to. We say, our, 10 units of our community currency is this much. The only word that I've heard this kind of discussion is tariff.
What?
Terra.
Well, let's not use that. Regal used the Valun, V-A-L-U-N.
Okay, so Valun. So we got the Valun, and then we all speak about our, you know, that's the aggregate average value of this basket commodity globally. And I say, you know, one ethic hour is worth this many Valun, and you guys all do your currency to that. And then, I mean, I do think it's convenient to have a parity to the national currency, but, you know, with the power of digital transaction and mobile transaction, we aren't as dependent on that as we used to be, because it used to be cash, you know, have, you know, kind of 10% type situation. But now we can go through the lens of the value of the transaction to make sure that our community currencies maintain a standardized value globally that's more stable, and decouples us from the national currencies while not being ridiculous, like impractically inconvenient.
Yeah, that's the way it has to be. When you learn a new language, you've got to have a dictionary that translates one into the other. And they did this in France when they converted to the euro. Vendors were required to put both prices on display. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the euro was the new standard, but you had to relate it to the franc, so that the people could judge whether they were being cheated or not, whether prices were being jacked up opportunistically.
So a big takeaway for practitioners is to get your local businesses to denominate their goods in your national currency and your local currency. Different pricing. If you have the dual pricing, it's good. And you think it's good production.
And I think that we have to be aware, I'm not saying no to what you're saying, because it might be what is more suitable, but the practical ramifications of all these are tremendous.
I know. I'm not saying that without saying that. I have nothing like, believe me.
Well, the practical ramifications of everything we do here are tremendous. We're talking about a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
let's go step by step.
So, thank you. I'll send you my summary.
There's more than one potential measure for different purposes. What you say is really important. The resources which are crucial for the health and survival of one community are different from those of another. And the impacts of using or acquiring one by one is different from those of another.
What does that have to do with our choice of measuring value?
I think they have everything to do. Because if you're trying to actually reduce disparities between potentially trading communities, because one has a resource level needs more than the other, which you can exchange, then based upon what is most crucial, well, not necessarily most valuable, but what is most crucial for that community health and survival, can be used as the basis of measure to negotiate some exchange.
Didn't we agree that the choice of how we measure is pretty arbitrary?
No.
How late did you come in?
Okay. You'll have to listen to the recording. I think we're about out of time. We ought to go back for the plenary.
Do we have a recording, actually?
Yeah, she's recording.
Can we pass on our...
I just want to say, regarding everything that we decide to do in any situation, one biggest problem I found is this suggestion, is that it requires quite a lot of investment on the local side. You keep checking intimate when the price changes in these averages.
No, what we need to do is organize a team of statistical experts to work out the commodities and keep track of the prices and publish from minute to minute the value equivalents in dollars and euros.
World Bank, IMF.
How did they get the data?
Market data is readily available. Bloomberg has it all on.
All right. So this is the situation. The second one I want to say, this is coming from my profession, is you have to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And it's this is the measure of unit, and after this discussion, I'm coming out a little bit shaky. I can't explain it to someone standing outside. What do you talk about? I'll say, we're talking about a standard measure of unit.
Do you need to understand how a jet airplane works in order to fly in it?
No.
Well, all we have to do is make it available and start using it, and people will get used to that language.
They just have to see the front end of the field. Yeah. They don't have to go to the mechanics, even though they can.
Their experience of it doesn't require that they understand anything about how it was derived. Just like the Consumer Price Index.
Yes.
Only better.
Yes.